Hello, sexy nerds of the Nerd Imperium. Welcome to another episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are your inner conclave of nerdom. My name is Diz, and I'm your pop culture and sports nerd. Ali?
I am Ali, your classic nerd.
You're overzealous on that one.
Yeah, you gotta wait.
Jumped on it. Oh, I'm V, I'm your comic book nerd.
Yep. A little premature, Ali. It's okay. I forgive you. You know, these things happen. But it could be worse. You could be prematurely sending missiles across the world. That's a nice little one, isn't it? Like, don't smirk at me. Respond to my fucking elementary school level barbs, goddammit.
Dick jokes is not something that I ever expected from you.
I didn't. It wasn't a dick joke. It was a missile joke.
Whatever. Same thing. So why are we talking about...
Technically a missile is just a big dick.
George Carlin talks about it. Yeah. It's all just a bunch of dicks.
Yeah.
We're talking about this because, again, North Korea. So there is reported news that North Korea has somehow managed to develop a hydrogen bomb that is specifically developed the materials that it could put into an intercontinental ballistic missile, ICBM. And that it had tested these in an underground facility or something that caused a fucking earthquake. And so now South Korea, Japan, and the United States are all on alert. And then, of course, there was news that right after they tested it, the U.S. or South Korea responded by putting up a bunch of anti-missile defenses, and then we heard that they were moving their missiles to the West Coast.
Our missiles or
their missiles to the West Coast?
South Korea's.
So this is yet again in the ongoing saga of we may die tomorrow.
Mm.
And North Korea is developed. So
As I understand it, the hydrogen bomb that they're developing is roughly, I think it's like 100 times more powerful than what we dropped in Hiroshima, right? Something along those lines.
Yeah. Oh. Hydrogen bombs in general are more powerful than atom bombs. I know this because I did a project in sixth grade on the atom bomb, and I drew the two mushroom clouds in comparison.
Wait, hold on. You did a project in the sixth grade about making hydrogen bombs?
I'm not making hydrogen bombs, but
about the hydrogen bomb.
This was
I was trying to get the FBI to come.
Remember in sixth grade we did that thing called
ice search. No, that was in elementary school. We did a project that was similar. We had to do like a giant like stand, right?
No. Ours was called ice search.
Oh, was it called ice search?
It was ice search in sixth grade, and the reason it was called ice search is because it was the first time that we were being taught how to use the internet
search.
We literally went, it was a project over several months. We went to the Aliso Viejo Library. We researched things online. So there's this whole, like, this was before Wikipedia existed, so we would use, like, online encyclopedias, like Encyclopedia Britannica.
Encarta.
Oh, man, Encarta. We used that type of stuff to research it. So, yes, hydrogen bombs are, because I remember saying they're a lot more deadlier.
Yes.
People are like, what?
They're a lot more deadlier?
Yeah.
So this is what's crazy is that currently the hydrogen weapons that we have are about 1,000 times more powerful. So comparatively speaking, North Korea's hydrogen capabilities for their weapons isn't as powerful as China's and Russia, I think, are like the big ones that are carrying.
And they don't have as many as we do.
Yeah. And also the fact is, you know, they're not feeding their people. Like, they're literally starving their own country in order to create these weapons, right?
Well, they're also creating the weapons because they don't have food.
Yeah.
So there's a two, it's a two. One, yes, they are definitely starving their people, but they're also starving because we've got all sorts of sanctions on them.
Mm.
And so as a result, they're using the development of nuclear technology as a way of generating energy as well. So it's not just weapons. The weapons is like a corollary project that allows them to defend themselves from the imminent threat of the U.S. Because North Korea is paranoid that the U.S. is going to attack it any day now.
Yeah. That's what they tell their citizens.
They've been saying for years, for decades on end, as a justification for their weapons program. But the development of nuclear energy in particular is about the energy, right? It's to create industries in order to produce food, etc., and trade.
You know what it's actually reminded me of was... in Iron Man, when, like, you know, he has the arc reactor, right?
Right.
Right. And then, like, Obadiah's all like, we made this energy thing to kind of appease the hippies. And he's like, no, we can make the weapon or I can the suit. We can do all these things out of it, right? It's kind of the same thing where it's like, I mean, the weapon is what we're thinking about. But, the capabilities of industry, right? Also coming through.
Because industry is something that they're very keen on. They don't have food.
Yeah.
They don't have energy.
Now, this is what I find interesting is that, so we're... you know, Trump is trying to push. I mean, he's talking crap on South Korea because South Korea goes, this is serious. We need to bring them to the table and talk.
Uh-huh.
Right? He's kind of talking shit on all of our allies.
He's talking shit to China. He's talking shit to...
Now, this is what I think is nuts, right? Now, famed human rights activist and chicken tender enthusiast Henry Kissinger is talking about how what he wants to do is he wants to tell the people...
Did you call him Ann Kissinger?
Huh? No.
Oh, what'd you say?
I said Henry Kissinger.
He said...
I also call him a chicken tender enthusiast.
And chicken tender... chicken tender enthusiast. Like, wait a minute. Did you call him a civil rights activist?
Yeah, I was being sarcastic.
I was so confused. I was like, who the fuck is he going to talk about now?
Go on.
Anyway, so he actually proposed this idea that what he wanted to do was basically tell China that once the threat has been taken through trade sanctions with North Korea, et cetera, basically starving out North Korea, right, with their trades, that the U.S. would actually remove presence from South Korea, once everything got figured out, whether it be South and North Korea reunifying or China taking through, because what the idea being that China will not have to worry about U.S. presence right along their border.
Right.
Now, the problem with that is, though, and this is a huge humanitarian issue, what you do with that is you're literally already starving out a country that's already starving, right?
Uh-huh.
So it's a huge human rights crisis because China's going to have to worry about refugees. South Korea's going to have to worry about all these things as well. Plus, Henry Kissinger's a dickhead.
That's true.
You know, like, there's a lot of...
China made a very clear statement that it will not tolerate any war on the Korean Peninsula.
Yeah.
Because fundamentally, it would have to deal with any of the consequences of a war, refugees in particular. And so it's taking a stand on it. And Russia as well just denied the U.S. opportunities to put more sanctions on North Korea. So China and Russia are kind of going, yeah, you built this, you deal with it. We're not going to sit here and clean up your mess. The problem is that you have a bunch of the Trumpkins who think that this is all Obama's fault, not recognizing this, first of all, goes back decades.
Uh-huh.
And secondly, that they have tested more missiles, not nuclear missiles, but missiles in general, in 2017 than they have in 10 years.
Yeah.
So this is the fact that there has been, and this is, when you look at it, the number of tests that have happened this year versus the number of tests over the past several years, there is an escalation that has happened in 2017. It's a result of the fact that Trump refuses to negotiate with North Korea after originally saying, yeah, I'm happy to sit down and negotiate. I'd be an honor to meet Kim Jong-un, he said. Suddenly he walked back on that. He's now warmongering and saber-rattling, and this doesn't work with a country that's already fucking paranoid.
Yeah, but here's the thing, because Kim Jong-un, unlike his father and his grandfather, was born after North Korea and South Korea have separated. Yeah. So for him, all the propaganda and shit isn't just like making
his
stuff.
Dad was crazy.
Yeah, his dad was crazy too. His dad was nuts. The thing is, I think
there was
he was born and then God parted the clouds or whatever.
He was born and the mountains sang.
Yeah.
But like, I truly believe Kim Jong Un believes all this propaganda they're spreading. Like,
Trump believes the propaganda.
So here's the thing. Here's why he's
the same guy.
But here's why he's more dangerous, though, right? Because if you pick on a kid who's already fucking crazy enough to believe all his own lies with some other idiot, those two idiots are going to go at it.
I don't think it's a matter of him believing his own lies. I think it's a matter of him being cornered.
Yeah.
If you're a wounded animal, and I don't want to make this analogy as if North Korea is an animal, but if you're a wounded animal, if you corner that wounded animal, the animal gets more ferocious.
And more dangerous.
It has nothing to lose. It already believes that the U.S. is going to invade, and so it's naturally going to fight back. The thing is, and this is why they're developing these weapons, why do you think they're doing missile tests, intercontinental ballistic missile tests? Because it thinks that any second now the U.S. is going to drop something on them, because we keep threatening to do so.
It also doesn't help either that, you look at any dictator who has kind of looked at the Arab Spring over this past decade, right?
Uh-huh.
You literally see guys like Muammar Gaddafi, who technically left but was murdered on the street, right? Who was literally dragged. And all these things that are going on, like, it stands to reason that it's him trying to conserve his power as well.
Yeah, more fearful the country is, the least likely it is to rebel and revolt against him. Now, we should mention that this situation is made even more complicated by the fact that our State Department is basically defunct. I mean, you have Tillerson, but he hasn't appointed a deputy secretary of state for Asia. He hasn't appointed a deputy secretary of defense for Asia. Because this is where the State Department steps in.
Uh-huh.
They have career diplomats who deal with these matters, right?
I'll do it.
Right? So people who...
I volunteer. Number one, we're taxing all the Korean barbecues.
I'm just saying that, you know, usually if the at the top levels, there's no, they're like, oh, these two countries aren't talking to one another, right? That's not true. Countries are talking through back channels and through low-level diplomats.
Right? I delegate Ali Baluch. He lives in Koreatown. He knows what to do.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen.
I think Rex Tillerson sounds like a dinosaur that works a farm.
Rex Tillerson, they say, is another one that may be out soon, too.
Yeah, didn't he like say something that was like opposed to Trump recently? Like,
yeah, he will say something that opposes the Trump.
Cowardly, but at the end, they say he's not happy in his job, so he may be gone.
I don't think anyone's happy with
this. This is the height of privilege right here, where literally people are dying from Hurricane Harvey. Now, we're worried about Hurricane Irma in Florida.
Yeah.
Right? Literally 800,000 people who are Americans, who are potential American citizens, are going to be displaced. Right? But Rex Tillerson goes, you know, I'm really not feeling my job right now.
The millions I have.
You know, this billions. Is... Yeah. You know, I don't feel like I'm being appreciated enough.
So we should clarify what you mean by the 800,000 that are being replaced. What does he mean? Does anyone know?
He is talking about taco stands closing.
Yes, the call, or unfortunately, a taco stands closing is what the people on the right are calling it.
Is that what they're calling it?
Yeah. No, didn't you, of course. Because remember, there's like a taco...
The taco truck in every corner.
Taco truck in every corner was the threat.
What is wrong with that?
That was the threat.
That is the worst threat I've ever heard in my life.
For the record, that was from a guy from my Latinos from Trump guy. Yeah. So no white guy that said that.
Yeah, no, the Latinos from Trump guy's a fucking...
It just goes to show you that just the Trump people, it doesn't matter whether you're white or you're Latino or not, you're just a nut job.
There was that African-American guy who was sitting behind Trump during his rally.
Yeah.
Republicans aren't racist guy.
Yeah, yeah. That guy runs a cult.
Yeah. They ended up like looking up
someone.
They end up looking up his background and like he's got like severe mental issues.
Yeah,
stuff.
No, he's insane.
What?
He runs a cult.
Yeah.
Republicans aren't racist.
Yeah. He runs it's called something. I forgot it's called.
Yeah, like, I have to look it up.
Blacks
again.
For Trump or something. It's such super, if you actually look it up, he runs a cult.
Holy shit.
Like a legitimate cult. Like I'm not being facetious. I'm not saying like Pastor Mark Burns is a cult leader. I'm saying this guy actually has a real cult, whereas Pastor Mark Burns is just a shameless Pharisee.
Who's Mark
Joe
Burns?
Austin.
Mark Burns is that black pastor from North Carolina who's a Trumpkin.
Is he the one?
He's that fat guy that's bald and he wears the big ties and he lied about his background and he got caught.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you said you had a BA. You don't have a BA. He's like, I thought we were going to ask about Trump. Like, he got caught.
Hello!
Didn't you know?
No.
He's got like the light eyes, bald head. No. He's always sweating. And he's kind of heavy.
When I think of like,
he looks like a bald frog.
I'm thinking
he
of the guy.
Like a, he absolutely no. looks yeah. like a.
Bald. I'm thinking of the guy who asked his congregation to give him millions of dollars for a private jet.
That's Creflo Dollar.
No, that's a different guy.
That's Creflo Dollar.
That's Doll. Yeah.
I need it. God willing it.
No. Pastor Mark Burns, look him up. He's an interesting guy.
Those.
He's a severe Trump supporter. They even invited him over to England. On my favorite show this morning with the ever beautiful Holly Willoughby, who is my secret crush.
But it's like not Graham a secret Norton if you show. Set it out now. Yeah, Graham Norton's a good guy.
I was talking about crushes. I don't know what you guys are talking about. It's Holly Willoughby and the Silver Fox, Philip Schofield.
It's Anderson Cooper is the Silver Fox.
No, the real Silver Fox, the original, is Philip Schofield.
Anderson Cooper.
So
bro.
They invited him on, and he had a fantastic statement where he goes. Philip Schofield was like, if this was about whether Trump should visit England, she's like, if it's an embarrassment to the Queen, why should he come? And Mark Burns has like no answer. It's interesting. Go look up Mark Burns. Anyway.
You know what I'm saying? Evangelicals, have any of them said anything?
No,
imagine that.
Evangelicals have really demonstrated. I think evangelical Christianity is the heart of Christianity remains in the black church, I've always believed, right, personally.
Yeah.
Because of the social gospel, the components of social justice in particular, the taking in of the refuge, the taking in of the stranger, very big. And now there is prosperity gospel stuff that's also found
like Creflo Dollar
in the black churches and white churches. Joel Osteen is an example of the prosperity. That shit's bullshit. It's a capitalistic stuff.
The seed money.
But
people.
Evangelical Christianity has lost its moral compass entirely.
For real?
Without a doubt. Any you can't have Christ without. You can't have Christianity without Christ, but that's what evangelical Christianity wants. They want a kind of Christ that makes you feel good about yourself, right? You can go and sing He is the Beloved in church but you don't have to actually go and help the poor or the downtrodden or anything like that. They want to be Republicans and go to war in the Middle East, but say that Jesus loves them and forgives them. Evangelical Christianity is a fabrication of corporate libertarianism. Yes. That's what it is.
You can wear your fucking puka shells and listen to Greg Laurie, what's-his-face, and then use the N-word anytime you want.
Exactly. Yeah. If you want to really read a good book, I'm going to recommend is Kevin Cruz's book. He's a historian up at Stanford. Or is he at Princeton? I think he's at Princeton. It's
rich
people
schools, doesn't matter.
Yeah, one of the rich people schools. Kevin Cruz wrote a book called Under God.
Uh-huh.
Really, really, really good book on the history of evangelical Christianity and how it is really fundamentally a corporate fabrication.
They're not Episcopalian? That's different?
That's a completely different
thing.
What
is Episcopalian? Episcopalian
is a branch of the Anglican Church.
Okay, that's where I got confused. Yes. Anglican and evangelical.
No, evangelicals with an E, Anglicans with an A.
I know, but it still throws me. There's so many.
Anglican is the Church of England.
I know. Anglican is the Church of England. It's basically Catholicism light without the Pope.
There's so many.
It's because a dude wanted to get divorced.
Isn't that a good description of it? It's a fantasy. Because it's like they still have a lot of the high rituals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They just have no Pope. They have the Queen as the head of the Church.
May I ask you a question, sir?
Yes, you may, madam.
Are you going to be doing a head-on history on the 75,000 different sects of Christianity?
Yes, there will eventually be a season on Christianity.
Cool. That sounds like one hashtag we'll listen to.
Yeah, because season two, which will be coming up soon, is still on Islam. Oh. Season three is going to be history of sex.
I don't need to learn about the Mohammedans.
Season four is going to be history of Judeo-Christianity.
And brothers and sisters, season four is when you want to send your $1 so we can send it back. Dressed in olive oil, because so you may plant it in the ground.
Let's be real, because I need a private jet.
Yes.
God wills it.
But you're part of the 1%.
Shut up.
What do you need a private jet for? Don't you fly anywhere on a carpet?
Okay, that's racist. That's racist.
That was the best joke V has told in
My
months.
My face was literally that GIF. That's racist.
It has nothing to do with your race, Ali. It's the fact that I know that you like to fly on Persian carpets.
If I could somehow manage to have a flying carpet...
Prince.
No, because that's a lot of
Prince
wind.
Prince Ali and Alibaba.
It's a lot of like wind blowing in my non-hair.
I feel like
You know what I mean? The nice thing about airplanes is you're on the inside.
Hey, if we were Aladdin characters,
it's the same reason why I don't have a motorcycle.
Would he be Genie and I be Abu, and then you're Aladdin?
He's not that goofy to be Genie.
Plus, I don't get shit done, so I can't be Genie.
Well, then damn it, that just ruins my fantasy.
Okay.
I wanted to be Abu.
Anyways, V mentioned 800,000 people being displaced. This is where we were going before we went on our tangent and rant against evangelicals. I should mention, just as kind of the final icing on the cake, you know, Robert E. Lee's family came out and wrote a statement against white supremacy, talking about how they want the statues down, they reject the Confederacy, etc., right?
Uh-huh.
Their church... just kicked them out.
You gotta be fucking kidding me.
You wanna talk about how fucked up evangelicals are in today's racist ass world? That's where we're headed right now. Anyways, the 800,000 people that V was talking about refers to DACA.
Yes, and what is DACA?
DACA means Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals.
Yes.
It is an executive action taken by the Obama administration to literally defer action on childhood arrivals, meaning that anyone who was 30 years old by 2031. Then
under
31 under in 2012.
Yep, June 5th.
You're 31 and under from 2012. That meant that you arrived in the United States as a child. Even if your parents came illegally, if your parents supposedly broke the law to come in here, you would not be deported.
So
there was a deferred action. There was a series of kind of benefits that came to that and protections to those children.
So it gave you... protection from deportation, right? For if you were like for a work permit, if you're gonna go to college or if you're gonna join the military.
If you were studying, graduated from high school, earned a certificate, or completed your GED, or you've been honorably discharged from the military.
Yes.
A lot of the people who are on DACA, 100% of them have no criminal record because
that's one of the caveats.
Yeah, one of the caveats is you can't have criminal records if you're on DACA.
Not even a single.
Second of all, they're all students. They pay taxes, or they're in the military.
Yeah, yes. And they pay into Social Security. So
these people are literally in the military. These people are literally in school. And now Donald Trump has decided that he is going to end this. Now, this was a big deal. DACA is something that his his Trump base has been pushing to end for a while. In fact, if you go to people like Ann Coulter and whatnot, she would say, screw everything else, wall and DACA. Those are the two things they really cared about. And so this was after a series of very stinging defeats, right? Uh-huh. He's failed on healthcare multiple times. His immigration ban is facing SCOTUS, right?
Uh-huh.
He's fucked up North Korea massively. He's recommitted to the war in Afghanistan, which his base hates.
Transgender ban in the military.
Transgender ban. Like all these things that people, like his base was getting annoyed.
Yeah.
They were not getting red meat. This was the red meat that they were looking for.
But
the
I don't.
Ending of DACA. And Jeff Sessions is the one who's been championing it for a while.
Well, yeah, because, you know, Jeff Sessions.
Jeff Sessions is trying to get back on Trump's good graces.
Yeah.
That's why he's the one that went out there and. This little fucking troll that he is.
The same guy who was deemed too racist to be the attorney general of Georgia or Alabama is the same guy.
He was also a nominee for the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
I also heard that he had found a ring that makes you invisible, and he hid in a cave eating raw fish for years.
He does look like him a little bit, doesn't he?
He looks like a little Schmeagol.
He does look like Schmeagol. And like
Gollum.
And especially like when Trump berates him,
yeah.
I could just see him like kind of like being struck down by worm tongue.
Potato.
You know what I mean?
I can't do a Gollum.
You know how like Saruman like strikes worm tongue?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The sniveling?
Yeah.
That's how I see Jeff Sessions. I see him like a wounded dog.
Mm.
He hits him. Oh.
But let me ask you something.
Fat hobbitses, right?
Yeah. Let me ask you something. Because I don't understand this, right? Like, for me, like, I don't get why his supporters have an issue with DACA. Like, it literally, like, it's not going to get you jobs back at the fucking steel mill.
It's not.
Like, these aren't people that are here to take your jobs, right?
You're going
to
understand that for the people who have an issue with DACA, they have an issue with immigration in general.
Okay.
In general. And they say that they don't. They hide behind laws, rules, and regulations. They go, uh-huh. These people broke the law. But then they have a hard time explaining how they're holding children accountable for the actions of their parents.
Yeah.
Right? For that case, if your parent commits a crime, should you be held accountable? Any crime. Why is immigration a unique crime in which we say... The idea is that they need to go back to their country. Well, that isn't the only country they've known is the United States.
Yeah, most of these people didn't know that they were undocumented until they went for a license.
I'm actually not a big fan of DACA in general.
Okay.
I'm not. I think DACA is a Band-Aid on a massive wound.
Yeah.
The idea that I'm pretty openly leftist. I have an issue with any type of notion that immigration can be illegal.
I feel you on that.
I have a serious problem with that.
Borders are made up.
Borders are completely constructed bullshit, right? The free movement of people is something that I'm 100% for. Does that mean that we completely throw borders open and we remove things like security and checkpoint? No. I'm not saying that you need to put yourself at the mercy of hordes of people, but I am saying that if you think deporting people and stopping people at the border is going to keep you safe, it's not. That's an illusion.
Well, I think it's really... What's really messed up about this whole thing is, number one, the average DACA recipient,
which is in their 20s,
like 26, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Average age when it came, like, you know, they were about 6-ish, and then 26 now is the average age.
Uh-huh.
So they literally spent the majority of their life living in American society.
Most of them don't know they're undocumented
for the
record until they go and apply for a job.
Yeah, or apply for a driver's license. Yeah,
that's the first time they discover that.
So that's why I think this is kind of the bullshit. You know, you hear about a lot of people arguing that's like, it's not, they're not against immigration, but you have to do it legally. You have to do it through these channels, right? The problem is, though, the kids in DACA, they did do it legally.
Yeah.
And they're literally getting bit in the ass for being registered as recipients. They literally have their name, their numbers, they have no criminal record. All this stuff, they're literally registered with the government as DACA recipients. So they literally play by the rules, and they still want to kick
them out. Let's take a look at the reasons why DACA people are for repealing it, right, or removing it, right? First and foremost, they argue that it was unconstitutional on Obama's part.
How so?
That he went around, circumvented Congress. What they ignore, of course, is that Congress has rejected any type of immigration reform for 10 years before Obama got into office. 10 years before. We're talking about a total of almost 20 years.
Holy shit.
And just in recent years, 2010, 2013, completely rejected any type of act that would reform immigration. So we had a literal crisis on our hands with immigration. What did you do with these people?
Uh-huh.
Did you want to mass deport them? In order to avoid mass deporting, President Obama came up with the DACA Act. It's literally deferment. And by deferring, what he's basically saying is that the executive branch, as the branch that enforces, uh-huh. will defer enforcement of that
law. But I want to add, right, we've mentioned this before, but more people were deported under Obama.
Yes, they were. Obama was a deporter in chief. Don't make a mistake about it.
That's the difference, is we'll call his bullshit out.
Yeah, don't make no difference. Obama was absolutely wrong with his deportations, right? And let's also be clear that under his administration, he did expand private detention facilities.
Yeah.
He tried to end private prisons
towards
the end. But that was like his last term, and he was like in this rush to kind of all of a sudden become progressive, right? Also when he put up his college proposal, right?
Uh-huh.
But he did. He did expand private. They've exponentially expanded under Donald Trump.
Uh-huh.
Right,
not surprised, motherfuckers.
So he said, "I'm going to defer this action." The people who are arguing that it's unconstitutional or that he's somehow violating the Constitution by doing this act rather than going through Congress, then have to defend the immigration ban of Trump.
Yeah, right.
Then have to defend the wall executive order under Trump. These are things. If you recognize the executive branch's authority over immigration, you have to recognize both presidents' authorities.
Yeah. Right?
That's the reality of it. Now, second component of this, why people are, they broke the law. They didn't. These are law-abiding individuals whose parents may have broken policies
mm-hmm.
in order to come to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That's the second. Are you going to hold these children accountable? Third argument, why didn't they do things legally? They did, through DACA. But also, it takes decades in order to go through the immigration process. The people who are in DACA that have been trying to go through the process, I have colleagues that have become citizens. It took them 10 years to become citizens.
Wow.
It's nuts, dude.
That is a broken immigration system. Nowhere in the world does that type of immigration system exist except in failed states.
We have a fucking lottery system to get into this country.
It's an insane system.
No.
Now, finally, and the most important thing is, why does DACA matter? Why do people want to do that? Because it is. It's essentially a form of ethnic cleansing.
Uh-huh.
It's not the houses of white immigrants that are being kicked open.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the houses of European immigrants that are being broken down. ICE is deliberately targeting and basically kidnapping individuals and putting them in what amounts to concentration camps who happen to be brown. That is the reality of it. That's what ICE is doing. The overwhelming majority of 40% of immigrants come from Asia and Europe.
Really?
The majority, the larger population uh-huh. is not, they don't cross the border.
Yeah. They fly in and they overstay their visa. Yeah.
They overstay visas. We're not deporting those people. We're not kicking out Ukrainian illegal immigrants.
Canadians.
We're kicking out Mexicans, Hispanics, Latinos, Latinx, specifically. This is a racial policy. It's racialized.
Yeah.
Right? The people themselves openly admit it's racialized. Because why? They're bringing drugs. They're bringing rapists. What? There are no European rapists.
Yeah.
There are no Canadian rapists.
Yeah.
It's only Mexico.
Yeah, they don't send us their finest.
I mean, if you look at the proportion of drug dealers in Maine, where there's a massive epidemic of opioids right now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the demographic is?
Doctors.
They're white men.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? So we live in Southern California, Southern Orange County, right? One of the most like rich, prominent areas in Orange County is Coto de Caza. For a lot of people who watch like Real Housewives of Orange County,
Coto de Caza
is where all these fucking rich OC house moms are from.
I went to high school with some of their kids.
But here's the thing, right? So for those kids, they're all a lot of them are like tweaked out now, right? Like, because they have access to it. Growing up, I grew up in Springfield, right? Our biggest problem in my school was gangs.
Virginia.
Yeah, Springfield, Virginia, sorry. Our biggest issue in our high school was gangs. We didn't have a drug problem. People smoked weed, but we couldn't afford ecstasy and cocaine and heroin and all this other shit.
Heroin.
But in richer areas, so we had an area not too far from us, which is called Langley. Langley is where CIA headquarters is, so those kids were really well off. They had a huge drug problem. They were, the kids were getting caught with prescription pills, getting caught with cocaine, getting caught with all sorts of high-end designer drugs that we didn't have access to. Yeah, we fought. Yeah, like, we skipped school, but we weren't, like, doing drugs like these guys were. So yeah. Somehow, the, like, but our school was considered a trouble school, right? Like, if I, when you tell people, yeah, I went to Lee High School.
The language of this has always been racialized. The language of immigration has always been racialized. The language of drugs have always been racialized. I mean, this is most evident. When the drug problem was seen as a predominantly black and minority problem, black and Latino, it was what? A war on drugs.
Correct. Right?
Now, when it is a predominantly white problem,
it's a
health crisis. Yeah. Yep. So we're talking about it in health terms when we talk about Maine, when we talk about Ohio.
You okay? Don't die there.
Yeah, but when we talk about it with black and minorities, it's a criminal issue. You see what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
This is how race is always kind of in the center of our policies and our language about laws. And immigration is where it's most evident. I mean, when you have ICE chasing down people of a particular descent,
mm-hmm.
while ignoring where the majority... If you want to deal with so-called illegal immigrants that, yeah, they skipped the line, they came here illegally, then why the fuck are you not addressing the overwhelming majority of illegal? Why are you targeting the smaller percentage because they happen to be brown, because they happen to cross the border?
Go after the fucking Ukrainians.
You see what I'm talking about? That is the problem.
And I think it's important to also mention Alonzo Guillen of Texas, who was also a dreamer who had passed on Sunday trying to save people in Houston during the flooding.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is... I think that really brings up the how ultimately this is a... He's giving red meat to his base.
Yeah.
Because you have one of... And I tweeted this. You have one of America's largest cities underwater. You have another one of its largest cities, L.A., that's burning.
Mm-hmm.
You have a fucking Category 5 hurricane headed towards Florida, and your first priority is to deport people who've lived in this country since they were children.
Yeah.
It's a cruel, it's evil, and it is the policy of racist is what it is.
So you have to see that this guy, you know, he worked as a radio DJ, he's called DJ Ocho,
mm-hmm.
right, and he wanted to go and he wanted to help people, so him and several friends, along with his other friend Tomas Carrion Jr.,
mm-hmm.
They all grabbed boats and they headed out and they tried to save people. Now, their boat capsized, and mm-hmm. the three that were in the boat, Alonzo was in there, Tomas was in there, and another friend. Two mm-hmm. of them had passed, Tomas and Alonzo did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's aggravating about this is that they refused to give Alonzo's mom a visa to attend his funeral. She's from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They won't even let her in this country, even though he sacrificed his life to save people from one of the worst hurricanes or natural disasters that this country has ever seen. And he was a DACA recipient.
We have abnormally cruel immigration policies in recent years, especially under the Trump administration. The past 8 months or so, we have seen that not just the enforcement of visas, the arbitrarily denying visas to people. We have people who are coming over. We put on a conference for Middle East studies, and we have people coming from Iran and other countries that are just being denied access. These are academics. No reason is given. But they're mm-hmm. being denied.
They're brown, bro.
This is the type of cruelty that we have introduced with our immigration policies. I'm not overly fond of the DACA issue because I think this should have been, one shouldn't defer. These people should have a path to citizenship. I believe that we should have, I don't believe in the type of regulation of borders where we determine who's citizen and who's not. I think if a person is interested in becoming a citizen, if a person is interested in this coming into this country, they should be given the opportunity to do so. That makes everyone thrive, makes everyone better. It helps society. But I'm also frustrated that now people are paying attention to DACA. I think that's great, but let's not forget that for months now, ICE has been deporting people and putting people in basic concentration camps. So let's fight for DACA, but we need to fight for immigration as a whole and really address, you know, try to defend DACA, but come up with a real solution that will help these individuals. Not deferment. Deferment puts them at the risk of the executive branch. but something that confirms to that they have citizenship, that there is amnesty, something along those lines. These are people, these are law-abiding individuals. There's no reason to cruelly deport them. We are worse off for it. 800,000 people are going to be removed, people who are functioning members of society. That's on us. Yeah. And we do it, why? Because we want to make America white again.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this much, 95% of those people, employed. Right? Most of them going to school, most of them students. I mean, there's no, they are what the model, quote-unquote, minority is a lot of the time, right? What is the thing? They're no jobs, drain on society, yeah, drain on our funds, right? These are not the people. They literally pay in to all the social or all the governmental contracts that we have with taxes, with Social Security, yeah, all this other stuff. They're literally trying to better themselves by going to school, right? They're not breaking any laws. Somehow we manage to decide that they're the ones that we target. It's a ridiculous idea to even bring up taking DACA or repealing DACA.
I know how you can get more people pissed off about DACA.
Yeah, how's that?
You deport white people, mm-hmm, right? Because then when you do something like that, and especially you gotta do, it's a white woman. That's what you have to do. White women get national headlines. If you do something to a white woman, then people are pissed off.
This is leading somewhere, I'm assuming.
Yeah, well, I mean, like,
when you make an absurd statement, I assume either you're being stupid or you're leading somewhere.
I'm leading towards the case of one Alex Wubbles.
Ah, yes.
Yes, the nurse.
In Utah.
Now, Utah. Now, she was filmed on a body cam by a police officer,
yep,
at her hospital.
And on security cams.
And security cams. Not allowing or not drawing blood off her unconscious patient.
No, let's clarify. A sheriff,
uh-huh,
Payne,
yes,
arrives to take blood from an unconscious person, asks the nurse to do so. She checks with her supervisors,
uh-huh,
nine of which say no. All, yeah, nine of them say no.
Yeah.
And then give her the policy. She gets on the phone with the hospital lawyer.
Uh-huh.
She's on the phone with the lawyer and shows the policy to the police officer. She's not just sitting there rejecting it.
Yeah.
She went and double checked and said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Our policy says that we're not allowed to do this."
Yeah. She would have been breaking HIPAA.
Yeah.
Right? So she doesn't allow the...
He blames the messenger rather than the message.
So he arrests her.
He arrests
and he gets kind of like violent. She's like, "What are you arresting me for? I didn't do anything wrong." Yeah. He arrests her for like interfering with the criminal case or some shit.
Obstruction.
Yeah. Which is some bullshit fucking, like...
She was released only, like, 20 minutes later or so.
Yeah, but still. Yeah. Right? But it's bullshit. Well, unless they fucking try to give her resisting arrest.
Yeah.
Like, that's... It's one of those stupid arrests...
For the record, you have the right to resist... People... This is, like, one of the... You have the right to resist an illegal arrest. So, somehow we've... In the law, we've just got to ignore that. In the law, it says that if a police officer is unlawfully arresting you, you have the right to defend yourself. But somehow we use it in this sense, like, if you even resist anything, you're committing a crime. That's not, yeah, true.
And then you deserve to be shot.
Yeah. Whatever. You shouldn't have resisted. Right?
She didn't get shot.
She didn't get arrested. But you know what I didn't hear and I didn't see on comments? Well, she should have just complied. If she complied...
No, there was universal condemnation of the cop.
Yeah. Which is strange, right?
As there should be, for the record. Right?
Yeah,
the,
yeah,
cop should lose his job. Originally, he didn't lose his job.
No, he was just...
He was removed from that blood-drawing
Yeah, he wasn't even committee. Suspended.
He wasn't suspended. Then the mayor got involved.
Yeah.
And then he got suspended. But he's with pay right now.
Which is... It just doesn't make any...
With pay.
Suspended with pay.
I just don't understand it. Because when you're white and something happens to you, right? Everyone's like, "Oh, yeah. No, we shouldn't have done that," right? There's outrage, right? Because she's a white woman. Had this been a black nurse, I guarantee you people would have been like, "Well, if she had just complied, none of this would have happened."
Yeah. And they would have found out that, like, her great-grandfather was an alcoholic, and it would have been her fault. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But, man, again, it goes back to how things are racialized, how we view the law through racial terms. But also, I think, is it highlights, hopefully, in many ways, that there is something dangerously wrong with the police force right now. There is, I mean, there's always been, but now I think it's coming to the surface to understand that there is a type of culture of bullying. Look, a lot of the cops that I know, there's plenty of good cops,
mm-hmm,
but a lot of the cops that I know are people that I went to high school with, then decided that they're going to join the police force.
Yeah.
These are not people I would trust enforce laws.
No.
These are not people. If you look at the training that they receive here, the training here is about, what, eight months is it, if I'm not mistaken? 8 months is a police training.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at a place like Germany, Sweden, the UK, it's 2 years. It's a college degree.
As it should be. To become
a police officer. It's 4 years in some places. Because guess what? They're expected to be lawyers. They're expected to be the experts in law. They're expected to be able to... And they centralize things like de-escalation, whereas we don't. We centralize things like defense, right? So self-defense is the key component of U.S. police forces,
uh-huh.
Not de-escalation. So they're immediately in a defensive position.
Yeah.
They're ready to fight you. No, you should be de-escalating. The woman is telling you that you cannot do this without a warrant. That's their policies. Why are you arresting her? It's the policies. It's not her fault.
Uh-huh. Isn't it like a law, though, that you can't do it without a warrant?
So it's the policies. I mean, there's laws. There's ways around it and
uh-huh.
whatnot. So just go back and get a warrant and come back.
Yeah.
Right? Like, look, it's not that big a deal, but because your ego got bruised... Because you're a little man, you have to arrest her.
Yeah. Also, they said that the person they're trying to draw blood from was another officer from Idaho or something.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah.
So now there's a conspiracy that's actually kind of come up, like, you know, he was trying to find something, or he was trying to protect this other officer because something. Yeah, possibly. Yeah, but who the hell knows?
The point is, however, is like at least now it's being highlighted, but it's unfortunate that it's being highlighted. It only is highlighted when there is, you know, yeah. I mean. All lives matter, right? Where are those people?
Yeah, right there. Where are the blue lives matter, motherfucker?
Where are the blue lives matter? Say, they're not here. They're awfully quiet.
Yeah. Well, you know, of course, you know, at the reality of it, though, white women being the victims ends up being kind of the gen... Like, it's like they're the universal victim for, you know, for the people who are into segregation or people who...
Oh, yeah, right. The segregation was to defend white women from rape. Exactly. Yeah. The Scottsboro case, right, was a huge, huge issue, was this idea that this woman got raped by these black men on a train because the train was integrated, right?
Yeah.
It turned out it was completely fabricated.
Or the lady who claimed Emmett Till did something to her and he got beat to death.
The racial component is always intersecting with the gender component.
I mean, even more recently, you know, the transgender bathroom thing in North Carolina, protect the white women.
White women, right.
Yeah.
They're the constant damsel in distress.
Well, it just goes to show you that race and gender are always intersecting with one another.
They're used as a damsel in distress.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
I should mention, I saw something on Twitter that was actually quite funny. So as you all know, the anniversary of Harry Potter, the last event at Harry Potter where he's on the train, or he's on the train platform and he sees his kids off,
uh-huh.
right, on the train.
Yeah.
It's the anniversary of that this past week.
Uh-huh.
And in it, the last line was, and Harry knew all was well with the world, right?
Okay.
And then someone tweeted out, and it's got like retweeted 100,000 times.
Uh-huh.
It's like, and Harry knew all was well, .. Because motherfucker didn't pick up a Muggle newspaper for years. Because the world is a disaster.
It is.
During Harry Potter's time. But because the wizarding world is okay, all was well. So there was like, they continued, and I thought that was a hilarious...
That son of a bitch,
hilarious
Harry.
Hilarious tweet.
And his cursed child.
And his cursed child. The cursed child is the most recent one.
I know, but I'm just saying, that was...
So yeah, let's take an honor of kind of Harry Potter and that tweet, which reminded me of him. Let's take a moment and reflect on the series, how it impacted the world, how it impacted society, children, all of us, positively, negatively. I know two of us on this are Harry Potter fans.
Yes.
You have never quite been a Harry Potter fan because you haven't really watched or read it.
No.
You're never cool enough.
I guess not. The thing is, I think, because we grew up with it, because I think the first time I got exposed to Harry Potter was like when we were 11 years old. And
I think we were in sixth or seventh grade.
It was sixth grade, I think.
When everyone started reading it around me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it. Stone. I got it in the fourth grade. Fourth or fifth grade.
It grew up with us. They grew up with us. Yeah. Right? They didn't grow up with me because, you know, I wasn't cool enough to hang out with.
No.
Yes, with all the white people casting spells and shit.
Was there a reason you were opposed to it?
I wasn't opposed to it. I just never got around to reading it.
Oh. Like, because I know, like, I have friends who didn't want to read it because they're like, oh, no, that shit's stupid. Like, or, like, everyone else is doing it, so I don't want to do it. Like, I had friends
in,
like,
elementary school. Well, a lot of people that didn't want to get into it at first were not interested in things like fantasy.
Uh-huh.
I actually got into it a little bit later. I didn't start reading it until, I think it was in eighth grade, so a couple years after it had come out.
Okay.
But I got into it because... I got into it late because I was a fantasy purist. I was reading high fantasy, and I'm like, what is this childish shit?
But one of the fucking, you're an elitist, even in middle school.
I remember because I remember Miss Howell came up to me. She's like, you should read this book. You're always reading, and it looks like you really like fantasy. And I went, I like real fantasy. She said that to her, and she's just like,
oh, okay. Well, look at this little scumbag.
Lord of the Rings elitist. Right? So I read it, and one of the effects that it was the most immediate apparent is once you got past that initial, is that it opened up fantasy to a broader spectrum of people. People who would not consider themselves fantasy nerds loved Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I have friends that are not fantasy nerds in any way, shape, or form. They're not interested in reading Lord of the Rings. They're not interested in The Hobbit. They're not interested in Shannara series or Wheel of Time or any of that, right? And yet, nevertheless, they love Harry Potter.
Yeah.
In many ways, it normalized or mainstreamed fantasy, which is both a good thing and a bad thing.
I think the talent behind J.K. Rowling in this situation is, number one, she created it for a generation that was in desperate need of it, right?
Yeah. Huh.
But also, what she did was she kind of spoon-fed this new universe where it was, like, just complicated enough that you could attach yourself to it, but it wasn't so complicated that you just got lost in it too far, like you would with Tolkien's work, right? There's no Silmarillion or whatever it is, right?
Well, her world building is a bit of a shortcut because part of her world building is just the world we live in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So you take that for granted.
Yeah. And that's kind of the major aspect. Like, I think it was the people who are hardcore fans who aren't fans of fantasy, they got just enough of the stuff they liked, right? And then just enough of the fantasy that it's like they didn't lose kind of that part that kind of attaches themselves
to the story. Well, if you watch our YouTube video, because we made a YouTube video about Harry Potter and the Cursed Child versus Fantastic Beasts, I make the case in it that Harry Potter is actually a mix of two genres, school mysteries and fantasy.
Yeah.
In fact, we can see this in the fact that she does something, and every book does the same thing. There's a mystery at the core of it that they need to discover as school kids.
Yes.
They search and search and search. The thing that they think it is a red herring. It's surprise ending at the end.
Yeah.
And every book introduces one new element of magic.
It's true.
So, for example, Prisoner of Azkaban, what does it introduce?
The Time Turner. More than that, too.
Time Turner and the Dementors.
No, and the Patronus Charm.
You get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Goblet of Fire, what does it introduce? The Triwizard Tournament.
Yeah.
So it expands the magic world just a little bit. And in fact, you often will see, because as a result, now that's a very clever tactic on her part, that world building. Even new spells, right? Every series you get a new spell, the Patronus Charm, learning how to say spells in your mind.
Yeah, divinations, things like that.
So what happens is that you're literally learning as Harry's learning.
Uh-huh.
You're going through the education that Harry's going through. That's a really clever device on her point. But the counter to that is her magic system is not well-versed. It's not robust. A lot of the times, the magic acts as a sort of deus ex machina. Like, you see it, you see this deus ex magic, we'll call it, happening all the time. He has the invisibility cloak from day one, but the Deathly Hallows aren't introduced until the last books.
Yeah.
Just kind of they happen to be a Deathly Hallow, right? How many times has he happened to learn a spell that deus ex is everything? The Time Turner, total deus ex. You see what I'm saying? So the magic system is deeply flawed in it, but it's accessible, and that's why I think it's successful as a series.
Well, I just want to push back a little on not on the magic part, because your knowledge on magic and my knowledge on magic,
which is my knowledge on fantasy magic systems.
Yeah. You know what I meant. But
flying carpet, you know, I didn't say magic.
Fuck the both of you.
No, I meant fantasy.
Go on.
But you brought up her world building and it being a shortcut, right? You say it's a shortcut, but I think it's genius.
Doesn't think genius better. People have done it before her.
No, I think it's genius because the way she did it, like, it brought us, like, especially for young, like, English kids, because, like, King's Cross and all that stuff, like...
That's her world building. This is where I'll fight you on this. I think you're wrong on this 100%, because I think, in this regard, don't get me wrong, I love the Harry Potter series, and her world building is beautiful. There's a lot of it that is beautiful. Much of what she does is just repackage old stuff. She doesn't creatively create a new world. Some of the creatures she does, but people's names, the legends, the Order of Merlin. Merlin already exists.
Yeah.
So what she does is repackage. What she's doing is rebranding a lot.
But that's
of it. Now you think that's clever. In my opinion, creates the most dangerous element of her book series.
Which is what?
And that is that she treats evil as abnormality.
How so?
Voldemort is evil because he wants to kill and he wants to dominate. Voldemort isn't some type of, isn't part of the world. He's unnatural. In fact, they go to make extreme pains. What does he look like? He's bald. He's got slits for nose. He's not even human anymore because of his, the Horcruxes, right? But what about the fact that they have something called the Ministry of Magic that traces kids? They have a hierarchy in which house elves are at the bottom.
Yeah.
Literally slaves. And her and she touches it a little bit. Hermione goes on this crusade for the...
But they don't bring that up in the movies.
Spew, right? They never bring it up in the movie. They also... And she drops it in the books.
Yeah.
She starts off... Hermione becomes this kind of hysterical social justice warrior archetype. And then that's it. They never talk about the House of... They don't talk about the fact that there's deep racism in the wizarding world against half-breeds.
But do they? They do.
The only person who does it is they bring it up with Umbridge. But they don't talk about how it's structural. Where is there a centaur in that Ministry of Magic?
No. Yeah, but...
What she does is she treats evil as abnormal because she draws on this world-building. So she draws on the British government. Oh, okay, this is the Prime Minister of Magic. The Minister of Magic, right?
Uh-huh.
And as a result, she does something that I think George R. R. Martin does way better. She fails to acknowledge that there's something called structural violence.
But there's a difference between her writing and Martin's writing.
Yeah, but this becomes problematic. You have a whole generation of children. Again, I love Harry Potter, but this is one of her shortcomings.
Uh-huh.
You have a whole generation of children that are growing up thinking of evil as bad guys and not as structural, as everyday ordinary things. Evil is not the bad guy in the black cloak. It's that everyday person that does horrible fucking things.
But you're writing Miller. But you're
Stephen Miller's.
Yeah. But the thing is here's the difference though. For Martin's target audience is who? Adults, right?
Yeah, but you could do structure. A little bit of talking about how the minister. I mean, literally, the Ministry of Magic traces people. The Ministry of Magic decides to ban people. The Ministry of Magic breaks people's wands.
That's considered bad.
It's considered a fascistic government without ever.
People feel for Hagrid, right?
No, but here's the thing.
They block Hagrid from doing magic.
What happens to Hermione Granger? She becomes Minister of Magic.
Yeah, and
it's a position to attain. Right? This is a problem within it. How about the fact that there is structural fucking difference introduced into the story? The houses. On one house, the houses is a genius tactic. We're a fucking self-centered generation.
Hufflepuff bitches.
And everyone immediately does that. They identify. Right? Because we're a society that we didn't learn. We think that adding labels equals freedom. We don't recognize that adding labels equals more control.
Mm-hmm.
So we keep adding LGBT, LGBTQ, LGBTQI, LGBTQIA, LGBTQIA+. Foucault would be horrified. Why? Because he goes, every single one of those are now constructed identities by which the government can control you.
Which magic class did he teach?
Yeah, no, seriously.
Divinations.
History of philosophy.
What house was he a part of?
Definitely Ravenclaw.
Yeah, Ravenclaw, without a doubt.
Or maybe a little bit of Slytherin. These are the things. We become an identity generation, right? Where I'm queer, non-binary.
I knew it. Pansexual,
gender fluid,
furry sub, like you add on to your identities like six different times. And on one hand, that can be quite liberating because you have the language by which you can talk about your identity. On the other hand, you are literally categorizing yourself. You're putting yourself by saying you're not in a box. Mm-hmm. You just added a bunch of smaller boxes. That's all you did.
But here's the one thing.
This is what she does. So on one hand, it's brilliant. Everyone goes, I'm Hufflepuff, I'm Gryffindor. You, because we're a self-centered generation, you immediately associate yourself with certain traits.
Uh-huh.
I'm about friendship, I'm about bravery, I'm about intelligence. So you can, it's a great selling tactic. It's also a really horrific thing to do.
What house
Take
is
a bunch
that?
Of 10-year-olds and put them into houses that you then moralize. Guess what? You got put into Slytherin. You're all bad.
Yeah.
They said there's not a wizard, witch or wizard that went bad that didn't come out of Slytherin. And yes, she problematizes it a little bit with Slughorn and Snape, but that's a really fucked up thing to do.
I know, because how is that any different from being like, all black people steal except for my neighbors who's the good black person?
You literally, do you really expect Slytherin to be anything other than evil when you treat them like shit?
That's true. Yeah, well, I remember that part where fucking what's his name, old Beardface, was all like 50 points for Gryffindor.
Oh, Dumbledore.
You know? Dumbledore used to like randomly screw over a Slytherin. Seriously. Because he happened to be a Gryffindor in the day.
Yeah, he's a fucking white privileged bitch is what he is.
There's like a fantastic meme that goes, I can't fight in Dumbledore. And McGonagall's like, I got this. 10 points to Slytherin. He's like, 50 points to Gryffindor. He just appears out of nowhere and he shouts, 50 points to Gryffindor.
Seriously, man. You want to talk about... Man, playing the favorites. Right. I was so upset when I saw that. These are
things that, like, I think, in my opinion, so, that had negative effect
from Harry Potter. Let me give you some positives.
There are a lot of positives. Yeah. I love the fact that Harry Potter convinced a whole generation to fall in love with reading again. I love that. As a person who was a bookworm before Harry Potter came out, I love being able to look around the classroom and see that other people were participating.
Yeah, like, one of my biggest things is when I see my nephew, right? My nephew is 9 years old. He's read every Harry Potter book. And I love it that he's been reading the Harry Potter books because it's something that I can relate to him because it's cross generational. I'm in a generation before him because he's 20 years younger than me, but that's something that him and I can connect with. Right. Yeah. Another thing is like you say that it's problematic in some way with like bringing up like you know the hierarchy and race, but in another way it taught people not to discriminate.
But here's what it taught people to do. It taught people to be tolerant.
Tolerance is bad. Hermione punches a guy for calling her a mudblood.
Yes, and it's horrible. It's an absolutely horrible, horrible point of view. But guess what? At the end of the day, the white supremacists aren't defeated. Draco Malfoy is still the head of Malfoy Manor. Draco Malfoy is still...
But he became reformed.
He didn't reform.
He reformed.
At the end, he didn't reform. Yeah, he's not as openly racist, but he's still got polite racism.
He reformed.
He's still an elitist. That's what I'm trying to say is like... She's very liberal.
Uh-huh.
She's not a progressive. She's not a left.
So she's a Hillary Clinton.
She's a Hillary Clinton.
She's not a Warren.
Don't get me wrong. I love the Harry Potter world. It does teach kids to be less hateful.
Uh-huh.
I love that her argument is that evil is bigotry and good is acceptance. I love that. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I love that her characters are otherized, right? I love that her characters are marginal and from the outsides of the community, that they're not... But you look at her main character... He's a spoiled fucking brat. He's an entitled piece of shit. He's literally the wet dream of every little white basement dweller. That at home, you're nothing. But in this secret world, you are a hero. And not just a hero. A famous, rich hero. Yeah.
Weren't his parents... Wasn't his dad like a dickhead too?
His dad was a total dickhead.
Yeah.
His dad was a dickhead. But somehow, Harry Potter is like this famous, rich hero.
Yeah, fuck you, James.
For doing what?
Not
surviving?
Dying.
Surviving?
Yeah, what I want to know is... How does that hat work exactly?
The sorting hat?
What is
it's
it like?
It's a talking hat that it puts on your head and it judges your qualities and qualifications and then puts you into a house.
Yeah.
It's fucking...
It reads your mind.
It's fucked up.
It reads your mind.
That hat is like some Ellis Island shit right there.
It's worse than Ellis Island. Like, it's literally like Gestapo-esque shit. It's like,
right.
You get a star, you get a Jew star, you don't get a Jew star. Holy That's shit. What it does. Yeah.
But
it's
it also, does it determine fucked up shit. Does it determine your little animal familiar thing too?
No, it doesn't.
How do you find out the animal
thing? Not everyone has an animal familiar. You just buy a pet.
Yeah. Oh, well, what is the other one where it's like your super spirit thing? What's your spirit
animal? Oh, your Patronus?
No, Patronus is your spirit. It's like you cast the spell and it happens by itself.
Okay, yeah. So how do you choose that?
You don't choose it.
Oh, you choose it.
It's just a reflection of your spirit.
Okay, yeah. So
it doesn't choose you. It's a reflection.
Didn't you get like a toad for yours?
No. There wasn't a toad option.
No, but like in the thing.
Yeah, there wasn't a toad option.
What'd you get?
I ended up getting Gryffindor for some reason.
No. That's the sorting hat.
I got a stag like creature.
Oh, you had a stag. I got like a rabbit or something.
Got like some type of lynx thing.
Yeah. See, I don't believe it. I'm part of a very exclusive house.
What? House Kraken?
No. See, I don't believe in Gryffindors. I don't believe in Gryffindor at all, actually.
No?
I'm part of the Huffle. I don't give a fuck.
See?
Yeah.
This guy. He's a Slytherin. Through and through.
So... I was thinking about it the other day, and I realized that if I really did have a Patronus, it would be a cross between kind of an ill-tempered toad or an octopus.
I'm a fan of octopi.
Yeah.
Didn't I see? I
actually found out octopod is actually like what a group of octopi is.
A group of octopi is an octopod.
Like
several.
Yeah, like a murder of crows.
Yeah.
Octopod.
An unkindness of ravens.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
I'm a fan of octopi. They're one of my favorite animals because they're so weird.
And they're really smart.
Yeah, I heard they're super smart. Like, they'll, like, trick, like, the zookeepers to give them more food and shit.
They're also delicious.
They open shit and stuff.
Yeah, like, they open jars and shit, right? Stealing the peanut butter. But anyway, So the other day, I remember I promised you guys an octopus
story. Ooh, that's why you brought us the octopi.
And I got to tell you, this is I got to this because it also reminded me of how I got to the octopus story when you guys were talking about Dumbledore and what a dickhead he is, right? Uh-huh. Because I was reading a story on the Telegraph about a Viker, this holy man, who claimed, who went to the hospital because he got a potato shoved up his ass, right?
Wait, wait, hold on.
So I was reading, someone sent me an article about a Viker. So this, I don't know how, a Viker's a church guy, right?
A Viker?
A Viker? I was wondering.
I was confused. I was like, is he talking about a Viking?
Yeah, he's like a Viker. What the fuck is a Viker?
A V-I-C-A-R, right?
Viker.
A Viker.
Oh.
A Viker.
What's a Viker do, Ali?
That was a Diz moment.
He got a potato somehow jammed up his butt, right? But he had claimed that it wasn't a sex thing. Because what had happened was he was hanging up drapes while he was naked and he just kind of fell on the vegetable.
What's a vicar and why is a potato near his butt?
A vicar is just a churchman.
A churchman?
Yeah. So that reminded me because when you talked about Dumbledore, right? But
how does a potato in the butt remind you of Dumbledore?
No, it was the vicar part.
I thought he was like making like a homophobic thing because Dumbledore is gay.
No, I didn't know he was gay. Anyway.
He's secretly homophobic. He doesn't even know it.
Nothing to do with that. So now I was reading the story and I got linked to another great story about an octopus named Otto, right? Now he's from Germany.
That's a German name.
Now, is that the octopus that predicted shit?
No. It's a different one, okay? This octopus doesn't have prophetic abilities. But a lot like you, he's ill-tempered and he likes causing chaos.
That's really fucked up.
You're ill-tempered.
So,
out of the three of us, I'm the most mild-mannered.
You're mild-mannered to people's faces, right? But I know that shit that you do.
You have a worse temper than I do.
I have a horrible temper, right? And I don't.
This is even a worse temper than I do. Fuck both of you.
You're ill-tempered in a different way.
I'm nice.
Okay? You know, you stub your toe, and next thing you know, a building's on fire. It's like shit like that.
No, it's not. I cannot deny this.
Yeah, exactly, right. So anyway, so this octopus named Otto, right? Now, he was living in the Sea Star Aquarium in Coburg, Germany.
Otto von Ruthless.
Yeah, he's been... No, that's not... What Otto...
Otto von Ruthless.
Stop ruining his story.
I'm just giving him a name.
It's V's time. Shut up.
That was Stone Cold Steve Austin's perspective name. Shut up. Anyway.
It's a good one. So, I appreciate you.
Otto the Octopus apparently was kind of a jerk. Uh-huh. Right, when he would do things like he was known to like juggle hermit crabs. He also threw rocks against the aquarium side to like cause cracks in the so they were like he's kind of an ill-tempered octopus. And during the winter months, it gets kind of cold in Germany, so they tend to close the aquarium.
Uh-huh.
Now the people who were working in the aquarium were kind of like, you know, they would come in and out, and they noticed that the electrical system in the aquarium kept shorting out.
Mm.
Right, so. The electricians didn't know what it was. The problem is, though, with the electricity shorting out, it would literally cause like the breathing apparatuses and everything and all the other aquariums to die. So it was really dangerous for all the other animals.
Mm. Uh-huh.
So one day they set up like a camera and they all slept in the office to try to figure out what it was. Turns out this damn octopus was really upset about a light on the ceiling. So he would like crawl out to the side of his little like aquarium thing and he would squirt water at it until he would short it out. Causing the whole aquarium
at the light.
Yeah. So you'd shoot at the light and it would destroy the light, right? Causing it to short out, and it would cause the whole aquarium to black out because it would like short out all the electrical
systems. I love this octopus.
Yeah.
Octopus literally risked the lives of every other sea creature in this aquarium because he didn't like this light.
That's you.
You're
Otto the Octopus.
That octopus is my spirit animal.
Yeah.
Putting everyone's lives at risk for my own comfort.
Seriously.
Every day.
Seriously. If you had a pet, it would be an octopus.
Once again, you know, he's a bald, eight-legged agent of chaos.
Wow. He called you eight-legged.
On that note...
Isn't that like a word that we use... In Farsi, like chaupai, no, it's four-legged, but still.
What the hell? What's wrong with you?
This is like when someone's like being a jackass, they call him like a chaupai or some shit.
Anyways, on that note,
fuck you.
Diz is going to take us out. Let us know what you think of our episode. Let us know what you think about Otto the Octopus. He's one of our favorite now is Otto the Octopus.
I think, okay.
So are there more stories of Otto the Octopus?
Other than the fact that he almost cracked the side of his aquarium by throwing rocks at it and juggling hermit crabs, there hasn't really been a whole lot.
Okay, well, you need to keep updated on this. That's your job, is to find us more Otto the Octopus stories. Let us also know what you think about the Harry Potter conversation we had. Do you agree that Harry Potter is great? Look, no one here says it's bad, but there are certain elements in it that we need to be a little bit more critical of.
Ali.
I think the house system is fucked up, and the fact that they don't really ever address systemic oppression, a little bit messed up. But, you know, that's just my opinion. Still love the series. Let us know what you think. Diz is going to let you know how you can get in contact.
Hashtag Ali Alumi, ruining your childhood since 1985. But yes, you can catch us on Facebook.
That's not the year I was born.
Seriously.
Well, shame on you.
86. Sorry. It was the other one that was born 85. But you were ruining our childhood since before you were born. Nope. Anyways, catch us on Facebook. Facebook.com/currentlynerdy. On the tweets, @currentlynerdy. On the Instagrams, currentlynerdy. On the Tumblr, currentlynerdy.tumblr.com. On the YouTubes, you search currentlynerdy. On the Stitcher Radio, the Google Play, and iTunes under currentlynerdy. So please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and make your friends subscribe to us on that stuff, and leave a sexy review. And if you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can they get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at VTran214. That's VYTRAN214. You can find me on my website at thesandwichslayer.com. Ali?
You can catch me online on Instagram and Twitter at AAOLOMI. On Instagram, you get a behind-the-scenes look at some of the work that I do as a historian, as well as hosting Head On History. On Twitter, you get a chance to hear my political ramblings. You can also find me on my website, aliolomi.com, A-L-I-O-L-O-M-I.com, as well as on our sister podcast, Head On History, which is on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Diz.
Unlike Ali, I will not shout out different things that you could find me at, because you could find me everywhere at Dizbulla, D-I-Z-B-U-L-L-A-H.
For everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in, and remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And House Hufflepuff, bitches, we love you.